Blair, why don't you sit closer to the microphone there and say good evening to us. I've read your piece in the extra issue, which came out of the Tribune. You also have an expanded piece that will come out tomorrow morning in the Chicago Tribune about the Twin Towers. Were you familiar with them architecturally, engineering-wise, prior to this?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in New Jersey, so I'm familiar with them both structurally and just as an average citizen. I once ate a meal at the top of Windows on the World, the top of the World Trade Center.
Yeah, I read just today the review of that restaurant because, of course, we're learning everything we can about every inch of those buildings. And it was a popular choice not only for the view, but some of the best food in the world was served there. And it collapsed with the rest of those buildings. It's mind-boggling. You said that critics said that those were rather bland box buildings, at least at first, right?
Yeah, when the World Trade Center debuted in 1972 and 1973, the towers were really dismissed as bland and banal, unimaginative, especially compared to the John Hancock Center in Chicago, which had opened about 3 years earlier. However, over time, they were gradually accepted by the public as kind of icons of the lower Manhattan skyline, and really, in a sense, gateways to the United States.
You know what I'm thinking about today, too, is the total mass of that building suddenly collapsing without warning into the streets below. If, for instance, that happened to the Sears Tower,
sure,
it would be very, very deep for a very great distance, and the chance of survival would be minimal. Are we talking about the same mass of structure here? Is it the same sort of dynamic?
I think that the closest comparison to a Chicago building is actually the Aon Center, the former Amoco building. If you can imagine two Amoco buildings side by side, that's really the structural system of that building with its closely spaced perimeter columns is actually quite similar to the two Trade Center buildings. It's astonishing to just imagine a landmark of this magnitude vanishing from the skyline. I mean, it's like Mount Rushmore disappearing or something.
Astonishing, but under the circumstances, surprising that it gave way?
Yes, even to structural engineers. This morning, I called a structural engineer at Thornton Tomasetti in Chicago. This is the firm that did the structural engineering for the Petronas Twin Towers in Malaysia, now the world's tallest buildings. At that point, the two World Trade Center towers were standing, and the engineer informed me that it was quite likely that they would stay up, though there was a risk to them from fire. The reason, he said, was the series of closely spaced perimeter columns in the building. His theory was that you could knock a few of the columns out, but that the loads of the building, the weight of the building, would be transferred to other columns that remained standing. Well, shortly after we had that conversation, one of the towers collapsed. I called him back right away, and he talked about how his fear, the peril to the building, the real peril, he said, was fire. In other words, all this jet fuel that spewed into the building stoked incredibly hot fires that burned through the fireproofing around the structural steel columns that hold the building up, in this engineer's view, and caused the building to collapse from the top down, essentially pancaking down on itself in what engineers call a progressive collapse.
It sure did look that way, didn't it?
Yes, looking at television, it did. Now, of course, the engineers all caution that they need to investigate it, etc.
You said temperatures may have reached 1,000 degrees inside there.
That's what the engineers are saying.
That's enough to, I mean, I'll forgive any engineer whose building doesn't withstand that. I mean, can they anticipate that eventuality?
I don't think so. And what's especially ironic about this whole development is that even last week, there was a conference about tall buildings in Frankfurt, Germany. And the structural engineer of the World Trade Center, Leslie Robertson of New York City, said he was asked at the conference what he had done to protect the Trade Center towers from terrorist attack. He replied, according to those present, that he had designed them to withstand the force of a Boeing 707. Well, obviously, that didn't hold up in actual practice. It's quite possible that what he meant was a jetliner could have smashed into the building's columns and it might have, knocked a few out and the rest of them would have held up, as engineers were saying today, but the fuel from these cross-country jetliners obviously caused, eradicated the theory and the towers.
However, if there, it's kind of silly to speculate a plane crashing without a fire because it carries the fuel. That's how an plane operates. But it appears as though it did withstand the impact, that they were designed
Correct.
To do that.
That's right. Initially, they did. And I think it's also worth pointing out that in 1945, a B-25 slammed into the Empire State Building. And the Empire State Building did stand up, in contrast to these buildings. However, 14 people were killed in that incident, but comparatively speaking, compared to the carnage of today, that seems like a rather meager death toll.
How does the Sears Tower compare?
To the World Trade Center?
To this sort of threat?
Well, certainly the Sears Tower, it's a very big target, as are the John Hancock Center and the Aon Center, the former Amoco building. Just on a personal level, everyone who worked in the Sears Tower and the Aon Center could go home. People live in the Hancock Center. There are condominiums up there that go from, roughly the 40th floor up to the 95th. I don't know how well those people are sleeping tonight. I would not want to be up in one of those towers.
Do you think they're structurally more secure than the Twin Towers?
Oh, I think all these buildings were, they're all structurally secure buildings. When a commercial jetliner rams into a building carrying tons of fuel for a cross-country flight, if the same thing had happened to the Sears Tower or the Hancock, I think some engineers I talked to speculated today that the columns at the Sears Tower were somewhat more widely spaced, and therefore, this is a little complicated, but I'll try to explain it as easily as I can, that a jet would have been able to puncture the building a little bit more, and it would have had a little more give to it, as it were. With the closely spaced columns, they said it was as though a hard object was running into something more like a wall, and it just didn't have the flex to it that would enable it to absorb this, the shock.
With those closer spaced columns, the New York buildings were more forced to absorb the energy of the impact.
That's right.
If you could span through it, perhaps let some of that inertia go through, maybe you've got more of a chance.
Right, and that apparently is what happened with the Empire State Building. A structural engineer I talked to compared it to this building, what happened here, to like having a post and whacking the top of the post, and then the bottom of the post would feel the impact closely.
Do you think this jeopardizes tall buildings in the future, the construction of them, the engineering of them?
I think that's a fascinating question, and ironically today, I had a story in the paper about Donald Trump's plans for a world's tallest building in Chicago. I think it's going to be a great test of American resolve and as to whether or not we build more tall buildings or whether or not...
Well, you don't have to build them if you don't need them. Haven't they in the past, at least recent past, been more a sign of ego or personality than necessity?
In some cases, yes, but they're also, maybe not the super tall buildings, but tall buildings are generally a desire for people living in close quarters with one another like they do in cities. That's the whole point of having tall buildings, or for people who work in a marketplace to come together to have face-to-face contact. It's really a characteristic building of our way of life, and for it to disappear would be a major change. But I suppose that the great impact of this of these attacks is that we're actually even asking that question, which would have been unthinkable yesterday.
Firefighter just called a moment ago and said that jet fuel burns at 1,800 degrees. So again, it's maybe the sort of dynamic that just isn't a reasonable sort of thing to plan for when you're designing a building like this.
Well, I think in the 1970s, the terrorist situation was very different from what it was today. And again, you raise a very good question. Will we build any other tall buildings at all? I honestly don't know. It's really too early to ask that question.
Comment then on the nature of the New York City skyline. Aesthetically, architecturally, as a symbol of the personality of that city. If suddenly the Hancock Center and the Sears Tower were no longer part of the Chicago skyline, I wouldn't think it was Chicago anymore.
Right.
I wonder if New Yorkers are going to feel that way.
I think they will tomorrow. I felt that way. It was, I grew up in New Jersey, and we could go to the beach and look out over Lower Manhattan, the bay, and from 40 miles away, see the Trade Center towers. not seeing them there, even this morning, was just, it was like not having the Sears Tower there. Buildings like this, I think, have a larger, they have a larger symbolic role. They are icons of capitalism. They are icons of business. They're icons of the American way of life. That's precisely why they were targeted today. There's no doubt about that.
We were looking for a directory today of the building itself, who not necessarily lived there by name, but what companies were represented. Mm-hmm. And while we had just a few reports, we really didn't get one. Do you have a sense of the tenants of that building?
I don't know.
Who is in jeopardy as a result of this?
I don't know. I do know that the buildings were originally constructed by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, but beyond that, I don't know. I don't know who the tenants are.
Was it your writing that I read, or was it elsewhere that, in fact, the buildings originally were designed, or at least there were some designs to build them, another 500 feet higher?
I don't know about that. I honestly don't.
The Sears Tower and the Hancock are the two tallest. Where are they in the scheme of things?
Okay. Well, the two Petronas Twin Towers in Malaysia are the first and second tallest buildings in the world. Sears Tower is the third tallest building. The Jin Mao building, which is an 88-story skyscraper in Shanghai, is the fourth. The World Trade Center towers were the fifth and sixth tallest in the world. One of the towers was slightly taller than the other. Tower 1 was 1,368 feet. Tower 2 was 1,362 feet. So obviously these were, and actually Tower 1 briefly was the tallest building in the world when it was completed in 1972. Sears mm-hmm. Tower mm-hmm. took that crown away and when its structural steel reached 1,450 feet in 1973.
You mentioned the Trump article. Was that the building that was purported to try and be the tallest? Trump was going to build a tall building in Chicago, but he wasn't going to try and eclipse all of these buildings, was he?
Absolutely.
He was.
That has been the possibility earlier. Now, of course, that all depends on whether Mr. Trump can obtain financing for a building like this, and that seems, even before today, that seemed like a tall order with an economic downturn underway.
Earlier, we were talking to some financial analysts, and they felt that if we were teetering on the brink of recession, maybe it's not even wise to speculate out loud mm-hmm. because sometimes bad media speculation about economics begets bad economics, and we don't want that. But right. if you needed something to push an economy over, and it's not just the bad news and the emotional reaction to it, but it's the loss of business that this company will go through when airlines don't fly and when retail shuts down, et cetera. There's a tremendous trickle-down from this.
Well, John, I really can't comment on the financial and economic aspects of it since I'm not a financial writer. But I will say this. Following the Oklahoma City bombing and the first World Trade Center bombing, the Oklahoma City bombing occurred in 1995, the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, there has really been a change in the way Americans encounter public buildings and office buildings. We see it even here in Chicago, where, say, the new addition to the Board of Trade, completed in about 1996 or 1997, is essentially a fortress. It's really designed to repel any sort of terrorist attacks. It has extra thick walls.
Really?
The building has very few windows. And throughout the country, Pennsylvania Avenue in front of the White House is the supreme example, which Pennsylvania Avenue, formerly open to traffic, is now shut down, has been shut down since the Oklahoma City bombing. So my concern, in addition to the economics of this, is about the American way of life. This is a country that has long prized freedom of speech, but also freedom of movement, the ability to go from one place to another freely in public squares. The Federal Center in Chicago has always been a prime example of that. Even after Oklahoma City, there were small anti-terrorist measures taken there. But the public realm, the public place, remained largely open. There have been farmers markets there and other things that show that we haven't given in to the terrorists and let them dictate our way of life. Now the real question is, can that continue?
It's an interesting supposition. The transportation secretary spoke about that today. He said that, you know, we have all sorts of freedoms that we hold high and true in this country. We don't always talk about, but we do appreciate the freedom of mobility that we have. And if our sense about public places or buildings is threatened, the way of American life will change if that's the upshot of this.
That's right. And I think that's what makes this unique, because it hits people where they live. this is an attack against a way of life, not just against the building. And that really, you know, that hits home.
Finally, Blair Kamen, Chicago Tribune architecture critic, do you have any comment about the infrastructure damage to New York City as a result of this? I mean, when two buildings like that fall down, actually three have collapsed today in that city. I just can't imagine what the cleanup is like, what the reconstruction process is like, how down deep you have to go to fix gas and water lines.
Right. I think that's an excellent question. And from the structural engineers I talked to today said that they were certain that buildings surrounding the Trade Center, like the World Financial Center, a series of towers that were built in the late 80s, or in the early 80s and mid 80s, would be affected by all the debris flying around. The air is likely to be affected, as your previous guest mentioned, by all this asbestos fireproofing that has, you know, has been flying into the air. As much as the physical impact, I think it has. There's a psychological impact, and that it's really unclear now what that will be. But obviously, this is enormously jarring in terms of how we go about our daily lives and the way buildings affect those.
And boy, is this leapfrogging ahead, but you wonder how the city will treat that space in the future. What you wrote today was the day that, what was it, final plans in Oklahoma City were due for a new federal building there.
There's a real irony because the architect for the building that will replace the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City is from Chicago. I called her today and got her reaction about the story. And she mentioned the irony that on this very day, the final construction bids were due for the new four-story building that will replace the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City.
Not on the same grounds or in the same area?
Nearby,
yeah.
A few blocks away in downtown Oklahoma City. So at the very time we're trying to rebuild and go on from what was the worst attack, the worst terrorist attack on American soil, another attack has made that one seem almost small by comparison.
Blair's column appeared in the Chicago Tribune three times, I guess, in 24 hours. He had a story today, but then in the extra special extra issue that came out, there is his story, and then you'll see still another version expanded again in tomorrow morning's paper. He's also online with this story at chicagotribune.com. Blair Kamen, always a pleasure to visit with you. Never in such dire circumstances as this, but thank you for your expertise.
Thanks, John. Pleasure.